Tracing Childhood Trauma in Creativity and Destructiveness. And it basically talks about the when there's repression of these feelings within us, how they tend to flow out of us in ways that are nonverbal, and they come out of us in our in the art. And she traces several very prominent artists and poses some hypotheses for or the reason for their work. One of them is Picasso. One is a German artist I didn't recognize. One is Friedrich Nietzsche. So I recommend them as books to help kind of look at some of the undergirding of issues around child violence. The third book I have there is called Beyond Rhetoric, A New American Agenda for Children and Families. If you're at all interested in where the new federal government is looking, at the time Governor Clinton was a member of this panel, which is the National Commission on Children. And this is their final report, which was put out in 1991, and it has it basically covers the whole host of child care issues, of child abuse situations, of poverty, and poses a national agenda for addressing those. It's $5. The one that's there is this is just the executive summary. The one that's there is the full report. It also, a real interesting piece of that, of the one that's in the bookstore, is that it's got, it has letters from specific people talking about, you know, very prominent people talking about some of their own childhood issues in letters to the commission, asking them to deal with certain or particular issues. Television. It's a word that is a significant part of our culture. And many, many a family, the television is turned on in the morning and turned off after the nightly news or after Saturday Night Live or something like that. And that other than that, the television is on all day long and provides companionship, provides entertainment, provides opportunity for learning about the world around us. It has become something that a colleague of mine tells a story about how George Orwell in 1984 had it all wrong, and where George Orwell in 1984 talked about having a Big Brother watching us. Instead, we're watching Big Brother. And that's the way Big Brother keeps track of us, by essentially creating a situation where we watch him or her, being inclusive. What I'd like to talk about, first of all, is look at TV as media. And dealing with TV, we have to first understand what it is and look at some of the basic elements of things that we have to know about media in order to take a good hard look at what it is and what it represents in our lives. First of all, identify four main elements of what's termed media literacy. The one is that media constructs a reality for us. What a TV viewer sees on television is what the industry decides to show, which is presented in some ways as if it is reality. Viewers can forget that they are watching a reduced picture of the world. Even what is shown as hard news has been reduced and interpreted, is actually reduced and interpreted versions of reality. People in the TV industry decide for their own reasons what that version will be. An example is certainly the news, where a particular item gets a 3-minute slot. And one of the things that very often in watching news on television, it's sometimes they go so quickly from one item to the next that it really doesn't give you much time to think through that the event that they're talking about, the people involved in that event, that event has a longevity before it, the incident, maybe a little piece of the incident that happened, and then there's some ongoing residual from it. I think of floods and coverage of floods like Minnesota is having and along the Mississippi River. I know we've had floods in Washington and in the Snohomish Valley outside of Everett. And, you know, we make the national news when that happens. The whole Snohomish Valley floods. We drive about a mile from our house. We get to a bluff overlooking this whole valley, and it's a big lake. And it makes news. But what they don't see is they don't understand, or it's not presented there, the whole picture. You get about a minute on the news, and you don't see and feel the pain of the people that are cleaning up afterwards. The struggle of saving the cattle that were in those fields. The one flood I remember, there were, I don't remember the Lipizzan horses. I don't have that right, but those large show horses were being stabled in the valley, and I think they lost all of them in the flood. But those kinds of things, you get the news, and then it's an interpretation, a flash of what really happens, and certain people sit behind desks and make decisions about what it is to show people. There's lots of things that happen that don't make the news, but somehow in the process of watching the news, TV wants us to believe that when we watch the news that we're getting all of the news, the advertising for the news. What do they tell us about? If you want to see all the news, you know, watch Cairo TV, the news station. This is the myth that's kind of presented. Media does construct the reality that they show us on this little tube that we sit in front of. TV uses identifiable techniques to present their version of reality. I think specifically in looking at violence and the violent episodes that happen, the issues around violence are all staged. And it's good if you have children and have an opportunity to go to a TV producing studio and have them go through the stunt part and have them, you know, some of the places they actually have situations where the kids that are there, whatever, can set up their own kind of stunts and then watch them. The difference between watching them with the naked eye versus the things that get hidden in the process of looking at them through a camera is really substantial. So they use techniques, backdrops to show distance, taking it sideways to show, it makes it look like a person is climbing the side of a building when the person is really lying flat, you know, and you get the side angle of the camera. The violence when you hit the different, those are probably the most common ones that kids pick up on real quick, is that the person who's being hit off camera goes like this, and it sounds like, and he moves his head back just as the blow is supposed to be struck. These are actors that are doing these things, but they're identifiable techniques to make us believe something else. Even more specific, the real violence of gunshots, and particularly where it shows a person being shot and the blood erupting out and that kind of thing, are suits that they put on that have these little things, and they're basically remote controlled, that basically make it look like real, you know, bullets are going through human flesh. Understanding that to a certain extent pops some of the myths and allows kids the opportunity of looking at those kinds of things, knowing that it's a trick to make us believe something else. It gives them a different, it can sometimes keep them out of the deep reality of the violence in particular. It basically changes the reality that they're presenting from being kind of magical, and it makes it into something that's understandable. Probably most importantly, and we'll be talking a little bit more in detail about this, television production is a business with commercial or profit interests. Though sometimes things are presented in such a way that it sounds like they're doing us a favor, the real result of that is the getting the goodwill of the people so that they'll still buy the product of the person that's bringing. I read something that, you know, most commercials, when they say, we now bring you the following commercial message, what they should say in those instead is that we now bring you as an audience to the people who've paid for this show, because they want to sell you something to make it worth their while to bring this show to you. But they always seem to twist the words around a little bit to make it sound like, again, they're doing us a favor. Fourthly, all media programs contain and teach values and beliefs. Realizing that when kids sit in front of TV without supervision or without discussion about what they see, that the reality of that show, what it teaches in terms of values and beliefs, is basically being seen and interpreted by your child. Some of the things that we'll talk about is how can we break some of that? What are some of the ways that we can deal with the teaching of the values that we may not like? Some things. Let's do another. Have you anyone who wants to write this down? Have you done it? Because I want to use it. Because television is so universal in our homes, what I'd like to do is kind of focus and begin to get us thinking about ways that we use, be deliberate and conscious about what we do around television in our families. And it basically comes three different questions that I want to ask or have you look at. What happens or what needs to happen before television is watched in our homes? What happens during the watching of TV? And what happens after? Real simple chronological events. But let's start with the before first. What are some of the things in your families, in our families, how do we set up and structure television watching in our homes with our children?
Consult the TV guide and decide what we're going to watch that night.
Okay, look first for a program. Mm-hmm. Okay. And how do you do that? Like, can they just look first and decide and then?
Oh, they'll flip through, but I have veto power. Yeah.
Okay, so they then, what's the next step to that? They look first for a program and then?
Yeah, they usually ask, can we watch this, and I'll look through and say yes or no, or that's too late, or you'll have to catch it on reruns.
So then there needs to be permission. And the permission needs to come from a parent, not just an older sibling.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
It's related to the look first. I decide whether I want to watch it then or if I want to videotape it to watch it at another time.
Okay.
So I circle it in the TV paper and put an R if I'm going to record. And then I program my VCR so that something that's on.
So you make a decision as to whether you want to record it and watch it later, or?
What to watch and when to watch.
Okay. Is watching television ever tied to anything else within your family life or structure?
Or the chores or homework, right?
Okay.
Our kid has to read.
He what?
He has to read.
Has to read? Okay, read.
So much in order to watch.
He has to read so much in order to watch so much. Okay.
We don't have a TV, but what we do is we have pizza and a video. So
okay.
We only have videos. We don't have TV.
That's our ritual, is homemade pizza.
So then you get a video.
That's right.
Okay.
That's our ritual.
Okay, so you have you just have certain nights that you know that. Okay.
So part of it is preparing the dinner.
Yeah. One of the suggestions that in families where there is TV and where there's maybe TV watched is to make sure that you set up nights of the week that the TV isn't turned on, and instead of just not having the TV turned on, but have there be some kind of a family activity that you do, a game of Scrabble, a game of cards, some kind of musical event, or have everybody put on a play or play some charades, or so those kinds of things, so that there's not just a blank spot in the week where they, oh, we can't do anything, but that it actually is replaced with something that that
well,
makes,
we find
connects
that
and relates.
Well, doing just the regular day-to-day living, that there isn't anything that we don't need to fill a void.
What about during? What happens during TV?
Can we go back to before for a minute?
Yes.
The other thing that we do in our house besides plan what we want to watch is just get real tired and too tired to do anything else. So you find yourself sitting down, turning on the TV. And you hadn't planned to. It wasn't pre-selected. It's just, I'm pooped. Let the world entertain me.
Okay. That's a good issue, because the question then becomes, when you have something like this, a plan of how the television is used, is it a rule? Is it a suggestion? Is it a guideline? How is it put out to the children? And then second of all, does it apply to adults as well as children? And those are questions that, you know, I think make each family, it's likely to be a little bit different. But the issues around television for children are harder in terms of issues around control if, as adults, we tend to not be, have discipline around the watching of television ourselves. The model is real strong in terms of its use as a way of just unplugging and relaxing. Couple of things before we go into during that I should some more information about the physiology of television watching. Television is a fast eye movement stimulus. What happens with television, and you notice that they're particularly commercials are all very jumpy. There's nothing that stays on the screen very long. And what that does is that stimulates the very front part of your brain. And I'm not good on remembering the medical terms. But the front part of your brain is your is your reflex, is the reflex part of your brain. And it's through the front of the brain is where the information goes, and it decides there whether or not it needs to engage the rest of the brain. And so things like video games are very similar in terms of the response of your brain. It's very similar to watching television. It gets hooked on the fast movement, but it doesn't engage the rest of the brain. And the rest of the brain is where the language part is. It's where the creative energy is. It's the imagination. And it doesn't get triggered by television. So in watching television, when children who've watched television a lot as preschoolers do not develop the kind of logical thinking skills or language skills that they need to be prepared for getting to school. In fact, let me read you a... This was written in 1977. And it was part of an article in Newsweek, February 21st, 1977. His first polysyllabic utterance was Brady Bunch. He learned to spell Sugar Smacks before his own name. He has seen Monte Carlo, witnessed a cocaine bust in Harlem, and already has full-color fantasies involving Farrah Fawcett Majors. Recently, he tried to karate chop his younger sister after she broke his $6 million man bionic transport station. She retaliated by bashing him with her Cher doll. His nursery school teacher reports that he is passive, non-creative, unresponsive to instruction, bored during play periods, and possessed of an almost non-existent attention span. In short, very like his classmates. Next fall, he will officially reach the age of reason and begin his formal education. His parents are beginning to discuss their apprehensions when they are not too busy watching television. Television without interruption of an adult to talk about what's being seen stays just in that front part of the brain and does not trigger a link to the thought process and the imagination. Particularly the issues with violence enter in there as well. Because with violence, identifying violence, unless you talk about it, the violence becomes accepted and a part of an assumed value and process that's being presented on television. What happens? You know, a possibility. Thinking, well, let's with that in mind, what do we do with television during the watching, and what are some things that, given that additional information about what television is and does for kids, what are some of the things that we could do during television that would maybe break that cycle of just staying in the front of the brain?
Talk with the children.
And what does that do when we talk with the children or talk during television shows? If we as adults do it?
I can think are intangible.
Right.
That's the right question.
One of the things it does is it breaks the spell. And we've all probably experienced that kind of passive, our eyes almost glaze over and we tend to tune everything out. And television is a passive experience, no matter how active the show or even how interactive the show. That what happens with it is that it becomes a very passive event in and of itself. And if there's to be a break in that, then you have to bring in some conversation. An example might be during a show where there's a violent incident that happens, and someone gets hit in the mouth, and then you know, 15 seconds later, that person is up and maybe kind of goes like this and then walks on, and everything else is fine. One of the things you might talk about is medically, when someone gets hit as hard as that person showed getting hit in the jaw, that there's some pretty serious damage that's done to ligaments and cartilage and bone in the jaw, and that you don't just get up from something like that and kind of go on, that, that you probably are going to feel it for 3 or 4 weeks at least, and probably need to take some aspirin at least to get to bed at night. But the concept, again, that somehow violence happens, there's no real consequence to the victim, you can break some of that, the value that's presented on TV, that basically violence doesn't hurt, and talk about that. You could choose to talk about it in the commercials, or you can talk about it as it's happening.
Though that drives me crazy.
When people talk about during
television. You're going to sit here and watch the show, or you're going to leave. But I don't want people chattering at me while I'm trying to watch a show.
Right. Okay. That's certainly.
But that's one of the reasons why we have it. We have movies. And
right.
I find that the children, especially our small children, are really interested in what's going on, because we don't have TV. We only get it one night a week with the videos. I don't know if that's why, but they're constantly asking questions while the movies are on about what's going on in the movie, constantly. And I find, not all the time, but often, what they're told is, watch the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm aware of that, but that's what we do now.
Well, it may be, you know, that we need to clearly put that over here, too. So, I mean, but somewhere around the, and we could probably even put it here, too, if you know what you're going to be watching. You can help set a stage for children so they understand what they're watching, and you can, if it's a movie that you've seen before, you can help them look for different kinds of things to make it more for the children than a passive event. Again, the effect of children, or the effect of TV on children, the effect that the producers, with their commercial interests, want us to have is that sense of becoming absorbed and involved in such a way that we will watch the commercials and that we will then subsequently buy their products. Television does sell products. And right now in our country, the main purpose for public television is to sell products. And some of the issues around the increasing violence that we're seeing on television is because of that simple commercial fact. You talk about videos and only watching videos. The incoming of cable TV, the rise in the last 10 years of cable TV, the rise of the whole video market has put incredible pressure on public television to compete, to be able to keep their share of the what's it, the Nielsen ratings, I guess is what it, basically where they what percentage they get of the Nielsen ratings determines how much they're able to charge for the commercial interests who want to be guaranteed that so many people within this country are going to be watching their commercials.
So the time to talk is during commercials.
Yes. When absolutely.
When you say public TV, do you mean the public airwaves, or do you mean the publicly supported TV?
No, I'm talking about the public commercial TV, not the PBS, which is the Channel 9. Though, yeah, that at least in Seattle, it's Channel 9. It's different place than other places. But the issues around commercial television. The bottom line is still the dollar. And what the TV networks basically say is that we will guarantee you this audience. A good example of that is the Saturday morning TV, Saturday morning cartoons, is we will guarantee you this group of kids. We will guarantee you so many million kids to be watching. Now, who's going to pay us the most to be, you know, in that? And a question that we need to ask, is that the kind of decision making that we want around what our kids are going to be watching on Saturday morning TV? Some interesting, this is a little information sheet on the Television Violence Act of 1990. Some interesting information here. And how many of you knew that there was a Television Violence Act of 1990 that was passed October 28, 1990, and President Bush signed it into law on December 1st? Anybody know about that? Someone did, yeah. Let me read you a couple of paragraphs here. This bill was initiated because of the paradoxical fact that even as the massive body of research linking televised violence to aggressive and antisocial behavior grew, so did the amount of violence being shown on television. Brian Sullivan of the National Coalition Against Television Violence noted, we found over 750 studies linking television violence to harmful consequences for both children and normal adult viewers. Senator Simon, who Paul Simon from Illinois was one of the sponsors, found over 3,000 scholarly articles and studies on TV violence. Yet between 1980 and 1985, violent episodes on TV nearly tripled. What was happening? Two forces unintentionally colluded to open the door to the massive increase in televised violence. The first was the dynamic of the marketplace. We touched on that briefly. The emergence of cable TV and VCRs in the early 1980s challenged the dominance of broadcast TV. The battle for market share was intense, and it was fought in the marketplace and in the courtroom. Major networks viewed this competition as a survival issue. Market share and Nielsen ratings led to advertising dollars. This is the bottom line for commercial television. Success is measured in numbers of viewers, and violence, however much it is deplored, holds people's attention. And the second part is really a paradox. This is where the real paradox comes in. The second force was federal antitrust laws. For many years, the broadcast TV industry had in place a voluntary uniform code, the first attempt of the industry to regulate itself. Part of this code addressed televised violence. However, in 1979, the Justice Department, the federal government, brought suit against the National Association of Broadcasters, claiming that restraints on advertising, nothing to do with violence, but they brought suit about restraints on advertising that were contained in this code violated the antitrust laws. An appellate court ruled against the National Association of Broadcasters, and the television community was afraid that the portion of code relating to televised violence might leave them open to further antitrust violations, so they dropped it as well. The situation that existed in 1985 and continued to exist until 1990 was this. The television industry could not engage in cooperative self-regulation of televised violence for fear of antitrust lawsuits. And no individual company could afford to unilaterally reduce the level of violence for fear of financial suicide. Because of these conditions, the television industry could not afford to listen and respond to the mounting evidence that televised violence is detrimental to the health of children, adults, and society.
Could you give an example of that? Just name some programs, for instance, of how they were regulating and then couldn't. I just want to follow that better than I did.
You mean specific? It was an agreement, an agreement that they had entered into to across the board, all of the public broadcast
So for instance, they can't, they're going to...
NBC, CBS, and ABC, that they would limit the number of violent actions that would be a part of their shows. And I don't know the exact nature of that agreement, but that it was agreement that was in place prior to 1979, and it was when they lost then this antitrust lawsuit on another part of their agreement that they then lost the, they felt that they could not continue to group together, because that's what the antitrust laws are designed, so that these large mega producers of television, of commercial television, don't get together. And you know, so on the one hand, the government is trying to protect us from that kind of monopoly type of situation. But what it did is that the thing that they were being responsive to the general public, who were the consumers, and that there was mounting evidence that it was problematic. I mean, there's information that goes back into the early 60s of clearly showing the damage that violence in television did, particularly to children. And so their voluntary attempt to control that or contain that or limit that basically went with a federal lawsuit against their colluding together.
Well, I saw a congressional hearing on C-SPAN about 2 months ago, very extensive hearing. I'm just curious, did that 90 bill, was that bringing the federal regulation back into the picture? And then,
no.
Why
did it no, this, that, that's kind of the ironic thing about it, is that all that it does is that it created a three-year period where no antitrust action could be brought against them for limiting the amount of violence. It does not require them to do anything. It only takes away the ability of the federal government to bring lawsuit against them for as an antitrust action if they would choose to limit violence. So it's...
At the hearing, there was no mention of that bill. I kind of really curious. And the media itself defended, was very much on the defensive, and most of their stances were that they were, well, their defenses, let's put it that way, was that they had eliminated smoking commercials, and then they also now show all drivers with seatbelts on in television settings and so forth, you know, implying that they had really adapted those practices on a basis. Now, a congressman responded, it was primarily because of federal regulations that all those things had developed. And so that's about when I stopped watching. I was just curious as to me, it sounded like it was a fairly...
Well, the law itself is only, again, is designed to open the door so that they can get together and agree to limit the amount of violence. That's the whole, and it's, and if they don't do anything, the law doesn't do anything. You know, if they choose not to go back together, then
well, they were pleading to self-regulate rather than have federal
right.
General
right.
Justice. There were, you know,
yeah.
Were they making a like a gauge on types of violence, and was there like different ways of violence? That
I don't know. I'm sure that there's been lots of research showing, number one, that there's up to three times as many violent acts on Saturday morning cartoons as on adult primetime television.
I was thinking it more or less in terms of, you know, like sort of like the Rambles kind of violence, or the subtle violence. Or,
I don't know. I don't know.
I don't think there's any qualitative.
I don't know that there's no.
It's primarily quantitative.
Yeah. One of the issues that I think is interesting is, and in one of those media message, it talks about Saturday morning cartoons, and it talks about some of the qualitative differences between the violence of Saturday morning cartoons now versus the Saturday morning cartoons in the 60s. Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote violence was typified or was used as an example of the kind of violence that is funny. You come out of the cartoon kind of feeling feeling a certain kind of uplifted or certainly not weighted down by the violence. Current violence on Saturday morning cartoons mirrors real life violence. And it sets up situations that are very closely linked to real life dilemmas and using violence to overcome real life dilemmas where the heroes are, you know, use violence and are rewarded for the use of violence. The cartoons that come from very violent, I don't know if there's any Rambo cartoons, but I know that there's a number of violent, fairly violent TV shows that then have their Saturday morning counterparts that basically use the same kinds of issues. The issues around violence in television have a lot to do with what happens during the watching of TV, in my mind. You had mentioned, maybe we'll just put here during commercials. Because that would do it in terms of if the purpose of the talking is to break some of that passivity and breaking, getting the children to think, you know, turning down the sound on the commercials and then talking during the commercials about what they've just seen, what talking about relationships that happened, whether it was realistic, how did they feel, talking with children about the feelings of the people. And also making them aware that these are just actors and maybe helping them to look for, identify what are some of the things that you saw there that might have been, flip the board over, one of those techniques that make us think that something else is happening.
Well, the advantage of talking during the program is that you can ruin it by talking so much that the kids get frustrated and leave.
You can also make a decision to turn the program off, too. If you're dialoguing with your kids and if you're there with them, you may get into a program that you think is appropriate,
right,
and well-structured, and you 10 minutes into it, you decide this is appropriate.
So,
it also,
so you have,
with
some,
the kids,
have some control.
You know, I think a rule of thumb would be, I can't imagine that people are letting kids watch a program that they have not at least watched with them a couple times themselves. I just find that, as a reading specialist, I deal with kids when we're doing creative writing and creative adventure, that what they see on TV is directly visible in their writing, and we have to edit and edit and edit cruelty and violence and killing out of everything. It doesn't matter whether I'm working with a struggling kindergartner or whether I'm working with my excellent advanced class of third, fourth, and fifth graders. Violence is just pervasive in children's writing. And you can get it out of them and you can change that, but you have to do that with direction. And so in my field, I see that daily, that violence is a really strong part of where the children are writing and thinking. Plus, I'm really talking about a lot of the students that I see are probably not the kids that are in your homes. They're not being monitored. They're simply, TV is the babysitter, and it keeps the children out of the parents' hair. And so, you know, I think we need to figure out how we can get the message out and get people engaged that are not monitored.
I don't know if I want to address this question to you or to you, but I've said we're watching anything, and somebody dukes somebody out, slugs them in the mouth, and I say, there's no way you can walk away from that. My kids say, well, it's just TV, Dad. I mean, they seem, I guess that's my question. I get the impression that they know the difference.
Okay, and well, let me put what the research says about that to kind of put that into context. Research shows that children who feel safe and nurtured in their families are not impacted or as impacted by violence and television. Okay? But children who live in chaotic and violent homes and living situations, television provides them with an identity they're much more conscious, much more reactive to the violence, particularly violence where the hero is being violent to get out of and to win the battle or whatever it is that the hero is in. That they identify with that as a strong cathartic kind of of movement to deal, to help them deal with and process. And they see that. And so then they're, because of that, they see that modeled on TV, they're impacted by it, they're more likely to move in their whatever situation that they're in to respond aggressively or violently to that situation. So the research clearly shows that there's a difference in terms of how our children will see it. Lots of children from healthy families find television violence boring. And Emery, you had your hand up before.
Well, I'm just gonna make the comment as I was listening that if a parent is gonna sit and watch TV with their kid and make it not a passive thing, then why are you watching TV in the first place? Because if you're gonna sit there and talk to your kids and talk about what's going on, then why not be reading a story and talking about that? Or why not be playing a game? Or why not be out taking a walk? Because it seems to me that if you're really going to take the responsibility as a parent to make sure that kids aren't getting all these bad messages, and you're going to take the time, which it seems like a lot of times TV is just kind of a time filler. You know, kids aren't involved in something else or they're tired or, I don't know, it doesn't.
Okay, that's a good question.
Amen.
Yeah, one of the issues that we can see is if we see TV as one of a number of things that we do with our children, then TV becomes, in kind of into a proper perspective. There are some fun things to be able to sit down and watch together. And if you can see that, and there are also situations where our kids live in a world where all the other kids are watching TV. And there are programs that they really want to watch so that they can kind of be connected with their friends and stuff at school. And that's real important to them. And so setting up, that would be my response, is setting up a situation to have that happen. But have it be, if you look at TV here, and then you have, reading stories, and you have having the child listen to audio cassettes of stories, special music times, have these all be part of the function, with TV being one of a variety of things that they're doing to help to fully stimulate them. Again, the number of families that I'm aware of that in most instances seem like pretty normal, healthy families, but the TV is on all day long. It gets turned on in the morning, they watch TV while they're eating breakfast, nobody talks, they watch the news, then they all go off to work or go to school or whatever, they come home, the first one in, they walk by the TV, punch it on, get their snack, watching TV. The TV plays a central role in terms of that family's existence.
In the adults' lives.
In the adults' lives. Because
we cannot go to our children and say, TV shouldn't be so important, that's dumb, when we spend all Sunday afternoon in front of an athletic event or watch every baseball game that comes along.
That's right. I agree.
I mean, if you sit there
I like sports on TV, but I agree.
If you sit there and watch Charles Barkley, you can't turn the TV off in front of the kids.
Yeah.
There's a related issue. I have young enough children where they're not home without me. And therefore, in my house, I know when the TV's on and I can be in charge of that. But as they get older, and they'll be at home without the same amount of supervision. Or, right now, when they are visiting at someone else's home, and I don't know what the TV rules on in that home are, I'd like some experience and guidelines from other people as to how to handle TV when you're not there.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that then. Well, I didn't get through that.
I want to throw in something about after.
Yes.
When our kids were littler and before we realized how damaging this was, we did let the kids watch a lot of TV. And one rule we made almost immediately was that we're not buying anything you see advertised on TV. If it's advertised on TV, we are not buying it.
That's good. That's good. Because that's one of the
things. Don't come to us. Yeah. Don't come to us with that.
Yeah. That's one of the issues that plays into the whole parenting issue is that children, when parents tell their kids to go watch TV, and that the TV becomes the babysitter so they can have some peace and quiet. It works great. It really does get them away from the parent in that situation. But what it also does is one of the values is buy this, you need this, you have to that. Right. And it creates children then who are whiny children for things. Because it also teaches them how to ask your parents. Because some of the commercials say, here's little Johnny walking up. Mom, can I buy this? I need it. Oh, sure. This is a wonderful present for you. We'll get it for you. You know, and they go off and buy it, and then the child is playing with it or whatever. But it sets the child into a mode of wanting and needing these things. And it creates a relationship with the parent where the parent is in a negative relationship with the child almost automatically because you can't afford everything. Or if you said yes all the time, you'd fill this room with all the things that they would come to you for. So it sets, by its very nature, it sets the children into a situation where the parents are likely to have a negative kind of relationship. So certainly that's a good thing. And you could probably, that's part of the things I would see here of setting it as an understanding in terms of watching television.
I'm curious, isn't it confusing to children that if they have two different families, they go from one house to the other? Doesn't it kind of confuse them when you say, no, you're not allowed to watch that, but then they go to the other parent, they can watch whatever they want. Then they go to their relatives, they can watch whatever they want.
I don't know. I think the biggest cue. Yeah, I think that would be very confusing.
I don't think it is at all.
And I think that it's an adult issue that maybe needs to be looked at. But I think that the way that you respond to that is you lessen the need for television. Healthy children have lots of imagination, have lots of things that they like to do. Probably the single most important thing that will get children from watching lots of TV is reading to them. Because as they're real small, if you set up, I mean, there's some links with reading. Number one, you're sitting, you're focused with the child, there's body warmth, you're having them maybe sitting on your lap, you have the storybook there. There's bonding that goes on around this thing. It becomes a warm event that can happen if the child's small, okay? And as the child grows up with that, reading then becomes a real significant thing to them. Reading versus TV is probably the most significant thing that in terms of creating active readers in our children, it's probably the best antidote to uncontrolled TV watching.
But children do adapt very well to the discipline level of the adults around them, and you will see a child being whiny and jerky with one person and then be a model child with someone else. They know exactly what behavior is expected of them with certain adults, and they adapt. They're not dumb. They adapt very readily, and they can adapt to that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Here we have a standard.
But it teaches them a kind of existentialist kind of understanding of the world, that their behavior is dependent upon their circumstances or who they are, depends upon the circumstances rather than something internal. It sets up an external control of who they are rather than an internal control. Having them stimulated and know that they are responsible for their own stimulation and their own imagination and creativity is a holistic and internal control that they can have so that television, when they get to the other household, does not become important.
Oh, absolutely. I'm just saying that if you are in a divorce situation or if you're in a neighborhood situation, you can't lower your standards to the common denominator around you.
Right, I understand.
You still have to hold up your standard and say, this is how it has to be with me. If you're going to go to a neighbor's house, I'm not babysitting your neighbors, go ahead and watch TV. If you're going to go to your dad's house or your mom's house or your grandparents' house, whatever they do is okay. But when you're with me, this is my standard. I'm not lowering my standard to those.
Right.
We talk to the grandparents of our kids when they have them because we didn't have the benefit of living close to grandparents. So they come and get them and take them. And we talk with them about our philosophy. And we just let them know how we felt. And then, of course, we didn't monitor and we didn't ask our kids when they came home what happened. But we did. And I do believe that both sets of grandparents really heard what we said. And they said, we feel differently about TV than they did in parenting us. And so I think that worked out really well.
Yeah, they did because we didn't watch TV again.
What happened?
Well, good.
Let me, so we can.
But I think it helps to let people know what your parameters are. I think it might help.
So we can touch on some of the ways. Let me go through some of these ideas about what can be done. What are how we can create situations for TV? I've kind of touched on some of them. And again, looking at it not as eliminating television, because it's more putting it into a perspective that's a reasonable perspective in terms of the other kinds of creative things that children do. Limit viewing time to 1 to 2 hours per week for children ages 3 to 6, and 3 to 5 hours per week for older children and adolescents. And in other words, it also gives them an opportunity to budget their time, to learn that they have so much time, and it gives you an opportunity to have a positive choice-giving kind of thing. Well, what programs are you going to watch this week? And sitting down some kind of discipline and pattern for that. Select programs or videos for the week on Sunday or Monday. Discuss the reasons for viewing them, what is intended to be learned or gained from the viewing of them. So again, you move it from just the front to a holistic brain experience. Be a model for your child and choose carefully what you watch. A good point. Discuss with your child's teacher his or her goals for your child. Select viewing experience which will support these goals and reinforce classroom learning. As much as possible, watch television with your child and discuss how he or she is interpreting what is viewed. Use television as a babysitter very sparingly, if at all. We're talking about that. Be selective with programs your child watches. Ask yourself, how will this program support my child's developmental needs at this time? In other words, being real deliberate about what those issues are. Join with parents in your community to work for better quality programs. Stay informed. Read as much as possible about television's potentiality or potentially harmful effects on your child's mind and spirit. Offer alternative actions to television, such as 1 or 2 nights a week, have the television off, and as a family, engage in such activities as art, music, storytelling, puppet plays, Lego building, card or board games. Read aloud to your child each evening. Set that up as a pattern. Give your child regular opportunities to listen to stories on tapes or records. See, auditory activities are substantially different from television. And so these books on tape, or the children's records that you can get that have the stories with them, giving them opportunities to listen to those rather than watching television. And most importantly, specifically looking around violence in television, is turn off violent TV shows. So if you're watching with your child and the program becomes violent or very tense, then modeling turning it off and saying that that's just not stuff that we need to have brought into our family, and tell them why, and talk to them about that.
How does commercial television differ from, like, the VCR, right?
We are beyond. Okay. I'll answer that. We're beyond time, so feel free to leave. I want to make sure that those who are here for the hour, there's lots more information, and if you want to check out any of that information, to read it more thoroughly, you're certainly welcome to. Just let me know who has what. Yes, what's your...
Well, I feel really smug sometimes because I don't let the kids watch commercial TV, but then I let them rent any movie that's not on. And then you come down, you walk in, and you're looking at this, what they're watching, and PG, or GP, whatever it
is. PG-13.
PG-13 movies can be ridiculously awful.
They can.
But I've never... I'm thinking maybe I shouldn't feel so
I think
smug.
If you watch it with them and
oh, I agree with that.
Well, I know, but I think that again is part of what we can do as parents, is watch it with them and let them understand our disgust for it. Help them.
I'm just wondering if there've been any studies. Is there any difference between watching a movie once a week, which is what our kids do, or twice a week, as opposed to commercial TV? The violence and the sex on the movies that the kids rent are just as high, and you get it all in 1.5 hours instead of 30 minutes, an hour every night. But is there any studies that compares TV, commercial TV, to movies that you rent?
I don't know of any. I have not seen any.
You probably get, you don't have the commercial sales. You don't have that sales aspect. And the sex associated with sales. I mean, you know, Coca-Cola,
right.
World Cup, they, you know.
That's a whole nother thing.
So a lot of that goes away.
Philosophy of economics, it goes away.
So that's probably one advantage.